There's a change happening in the way we live, the way we work, the way we spend our money and make our decisions. We are evolving to be more conscious in our actions in a way that serves the world and makes it a better place. Welcome to The Ethical Evolution. The Ethical Evolution podcast is brought to you by the Ethical Change Agency. I'm Bindi, CEO and founder, and I am honoured to bring you the stories of those who create change through paying it forward and giving back. Ethical business owners and holistic healers who are determined to create collective change in the world. Once we have a change in consciousness and through collective change, we can become one. My next guest and I found each other on Instagram and connected through our love of podcasts. It just so happened that I had also been watching her in Lucifer on Netflix and didn't even realise it till later. Breanne Davis is a Hollywood actress, writer, producer and director. She can be seen as an actress in Lucifer, Casual, True Blood, the History Channel's Series 6 and the film Jarhead, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Breanne has over a decade of recovery as a sex and love addict. Inspired by her life experience, she is the host of the popular podcast Secret Life and author of a book of the same topic. Through my conversation with Breanne, I learnt we had so much in common and that we are both striving to amplify conversations that rarely happen and yet need to be heard. Welcome, Breanne, to The Ethical Evolution.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Now, for those of us who might not have been having Netflix binges during lockdown and don't know who you are, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm an actress. Well, I started as an actress and then director, producer, and now I am a writer and a podcast host. So yeah, I've been in Lucifer, just came out. I'm in the new season of Lucifer and Six on History, which is on Hulu now, and a bunch of other movies, Jarhead, Prom Night, a lot more. I'm an actor. I'm a working actor. I've been working for 15 years, but you probably wouldn't recognize me, which is fine.
And I've just finished binge watching Lucifer, can I say, which was amazing. I just got to the end and went, oh, is that it?
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, I loved playing Detective Dancer. She was so much fun to bring to life. I really, that was one of my favorite roles I've ever played, I think.
Yeah, and it was a great cast too. Amazing show. Now you're stepping more into directing and producing, and also with your husband, you've got your production company. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it's called Give and Take Productions. We've filmed three and produced three movies, and I've directed two of them, The Night Visitor and The Night Visitor 2, that are on Amazon right now, and I think Showtime and Stars. And then I have another movie I directed called Psychophonia. Sometimes in different countries, it's called Deadly Signal, so you have to kind of look it up. But it was like, it was a sci-fi horror kind of movie that I directed in 7 days, and I'm really proud of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we started a production company because we both are very creative and we don't like to wait for people to give us jobs.
Yeah.
So one way to do that is to make your own work and create your own opportunity.
Yeah, I love that. So what have you got in the works at the moment? I know you've been, in production meetings and all that kind of stuff. What are you working on at the moment?
Well, I have a couple television shows that we're about to be pitching. We started pitching before the pandemic, but everything shut down. So we're in the process of doing that. And then I also have a podcast called Secret Life, where people share their secrets and their shame. And I started it because I came out at a decade of recovery and sex and love addiction. And I wanted to give other people the opportunity to let go of that baggage that holds us down and defines us. So in doing that, I wrote a book, which is coming out February 12th, Valentine's Day weekend. It's called Secret Life of a Hollywood Sex and Love Addict. And it's a fiction, but it was first a memoir, but then I turned it into a fiction because, first of all, I didn't want to get sued. And second of all, my imagination when I started writing this character it just blew up. I wanted to put other people's experiences and Roxanne's story and not just mine.
Mm.
To really help people heal from sex and love addiction and know that they're not alone. And there's these 10 rules she lives by through her first year of being in Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I read your article that you wrote about your experience.
In HuffPost. Yeah. Yeah, right?
And wow. I mean, what a ride you've been through.
Yeah. I mean, it's a journey I wouldn't wish upon anyone, but I have to tell you, it's humbled me. It's made me a better person. I love who I am today. When I look into the mirror, I can face myself. I don't have any demons in my closet. And it's really been the best blessing and gratitude for my journey.
Mm, and congratulations on 10 years. That's incredible.
Well, it's 11 now.
Oh, 11. Wow.
Yeah. Even better. I just got my 11-year chip in December. And just like, I cannot believe how my life has changed from what it used to be 11 years ago to what it is now.
And I really admire that you've taken something that, you know, over time can be quite traumatic for not just you, but the people involved in it. And you've actually turned that into something productive to help others. And sharing those stories and the stories of others through your book and podcast, I think is a really great way to help people, you know, deal with their trauma and their addictions, and that, you know, they're not alone, and that, you know, there is help out there, and talking about it is the best thing that you can do.
I mean, if you're struggling out there, just pick up the phone and call someone. Mm. Reach out. It's those secrets that we carry around that kill us, that make us keep doing what we were doing. Then just if you just put it out there and say, hey, I'm struggling. Hey, I have this. I 100% believe the other person will be like, oh my God, I feel like that too. Or I've done that too. Or someone I know. So it really helps you heal when you know you're not alone and you're not buried in your shame.
Because you end up just going deeper, don't you?
Yeah, it's a spiral. It's a very brutal spiral, and it causes depression, anxiety. You know, it stems from like not enough love, fear of abandonment, fear of self-worth. And I just want to blow open the doors to allow people to say, this is my dirty laundry and I'm okay with everyone hearing it now.
Yeah, and it's such a liberating thing. And it's scary. It's scary, but it's liberating once you do it. And you're just like, whoa, I can't believe I did that. But boy, it's like a weight off your shoulders, isn't it?
Oh my God. It's the best feeling in the world. I have to tell you, when that HuffPost came out, I was so nervous that morning. Mm. I was like, what am I doing? Am I ever going to work again? Are people going to judge me? Is the world going to stop? Like all these things. And let me tell you, nothing happened.
Yeah.
Like it was such a humbling experience. Like, calm down, Brianne. You're not like, the universe does not revolve around you. Like, relax. So that in itself was such a great experience that the world did not stop, because I'm like, I'm a recovering second love addict. But I have to tell you, the feedback I got, the letters, the people reaching out me on Instagram, it has literally given me like a newfound like sense of purpose, of being of service for other people, to help other people, to give a voice that women are also sex addicts and love addicts, just like men. And it doesn't define who I am. It was a part of my pattern and how I behaved. But yeah, and then starting the podcast, and it has healed me so much. I do it for the listeners. I don't even do it for the guests. The guest and I are there to be of service to our listeners. But I have to tell you, my guests, almost 80% of them, a lot of them change their names, but they call me the day of and they're like,
yeah,
I'm so upset. Like they get so nervous. And sometimes they don't even tell me till I check in with them at like later in the week. And their healing has even like put fuel under my fire to be more transparent, to be more authentic.
And I completely resonate with what you've done there, because my first podcast, and I've been on many, was about 3 years ago. Basically it was called The State of You, and it basically was like a therapy for me. I basically let everything out. And I remember that first episode, which was my story. You know, it was everything I'd been through, my coming out, everything. And I was so scared to put that episode out and nothing happened. I was just like,
nothing happened.
But you know what? Right? I feel so much better.
It's hilarious. Everybody's so worried about something happening and nothing happens. So if you're scared to put your stuff out there, just do it, because we're telling you, two people. Happens to you.
Yeah.
You know, they don't come at you with pitchforks wanting to like, destroy you.
And yeah, that one only lasted about 8 or 9 episodes. And boy, the therapy I got out of that.
The best. It's free. Yes. Free therapy.
It is the best. Now, looking at everything that you do, you know, with your acting, directing, producing, podcasts, books, all of that wrapped in a little bubble. What would you say your mission is? Is it to be of service?
It is. Honestly, however many years I've been in my disease, it was always about me. Mm. I was so self-serving. I was so selfish. Every single person in my life, it was about filling me. I realized I used my family. I used my friends, girlfriends, my boyfriends. I used every single person to fill that hole inside of me.
Mm.
And now this, 11 years has really been of service. And whenever I make it about me, that's deadly. That's like me drinking poison.
Mm.
So forever I can be of service to somebody else, it heals me. So that's my mission, to be of service, to bring a voice to the voiceless, especially with sex and love addiction. You know, 6% of the U.S. population has it. I think it was 39% are women, which I think it's a lot bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's like 9.2 million people in the United States that have this addiction, not talking worldwide. Mm. I mean, one of my sponsees went to Bali before the pandemic and they had a SLA meeting there. It's all over the world.
Wow.
And people are struggling. They're struggling to find a connection. They're struggling to find their authenticity, especially in the social media age where everything is so disconnected. We feel we're connected, but we're really not.
Mm.
So my whole journey is to bring connection, to bring be of service, and to tell others they're not alone and they don't have to struggle. You do not have to go after unavailable people. You do not have to cheat. You do not always have to be swiping left, swiping right to get that hit, to get that attention. And you don't have to flirt. You don't have to intrigue. All that stuff drains us of our true self. And I guess that's my mission now.
I love it. Absolutely love it. And, you know, those stats are quite alarming, aren't they? Like, I mean, and I think there's also a bit of a stigma as well. Like, women are perceived differently to men when it comes to that kind of addiction. It's fine for men, but not for women.
Yeah, and they also kind of make it like it's hot.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I told somebody, a man too, that I was a sex and love addict, and you should have seen his face. He was like, ooh, like he wishes he knew me when I was acting out. And I was like, it is not sexy. It is not sexy to use people to fill you. Like, that's what I do. That's what people do with this addiction. We use people, just like a heroin addict uses heroin, just like an alcoholic uses alcohol. We use people, and it's like a cycle. And I used to say you can put a bag over someone's head. It wouldn't matter who they were. I was just using them as a mirror for me.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. And yeah. Again, I props to you in what you're doing, because this really needs a voice globally. So, and that's why we're having this conversation today. I mean, now looking at your recovery and also the work that you do, what do you reckon's been your biggest challenge, and how have you overcome it?
Well, like I said, the first thing is that your own fear of people judging you, of making up their own story in their head about, and then it's that shame, that shame cycle. It took me a good, I would say, 6 years of recovery before I offered the information that I was in sex and love addiction and that I had sponsees. My agent, who I've been with for almost 15 years, didn't even know I was in recovery. She had no idea until I told her the book was coming out. Well. She's like, what? I said, do you remember that year, you know, like 10 years ago where I didn't work for the year? Like, do you remember how bad my auditions were? Because I couldn't go into an audition room and be a person when I didn't even know how to be a person in real life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just feel the biggest challenge for me is getting out of my own way.
Yeah.
Getting out of ego. Because if I think about what are people going to think about me, how am I going to look, how are other people going to perceive my story, especially with the novel coming out, you know, it's a Roma Clef fiction. It's based on my life. Mm. But some stories are made up. I would say like it's a good 60-40.
Yeah.
But a part of me is really nervous about it. But I have to keep telling myself, you never wanted to write a book, Brianne. This is not about you.
Yeah.
This was bigger than you. This was God telling you to write. I'm dyslexic, like massively dyslexic. So the first thing, I would never write a book. I can't even write a good sentence, I believe. And my husband kept pushing me, write the book, write a book, write. And I'm like, leave me alone. Like, I don't want to write a book. Go away. Like, leave me alone. And he finally, I was like, fine, I'll take this writing course to write a novel. And I wrote it in 45 days.
Wow.
And that's not me.
Yeah.
That's God. Yeah. That's my higher power, being of service to others. So I just have to get out of my way. That's my biggest challenge, get out of my way. And ego stands for me, is edging God out. Oh, I learned that in the program. So yeah. I can't edge God out. It's not about me.
Yeah. Yeah. And
sorry, that was a little, I was like getting intense. Oh, I'm like, it's not she's about fired me. Up.
I can so agree with you, you know, like I think when we get in the way of things and we interrupt that flow, mm-hmm. you get nowhere. So by just letting it take the reins, I think that's the best thing that you can do.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only thing I can do because I will destroy it.
Mm.
I will kibosh it or I will inflate it and make it bigger, like it's the end all be all. And it's like those two things are not healthy for me, especially as an addict.
Yeah.
So when I just be and let flow in what's supposed to flow in and flow out what's supposed to flow in, that is like that magic spot where I'm just being me, being in this moment, talking to you, being of service. That's where I find the most peace and serenity in my life.
Mm, yeah. It's like you're a vessel for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I'm just, get out of the way, Brianne. I've been talking about myself in third person. I normally don't do that. So if you, I don't know why. Maybe I'm tired and hungry, but yeah.
I love it. I love it. So this one's going to be left field for you though. Can you define what being ethical means to you?
Well, for me to define that, I have to look at where I'm unethical. And before program, before Sex and Love Addiction, I was completely unethical.
Mm.
I would lie. I would cheat. I would steal. I would do whatever I could to get my needs met.
Mm.
And when I get out of those things, that's being ethical. Showing up when I say I'm going to show up. Being honest. Even though, you know, and putting my faith in others and not just putting up the walls and the mask I used to wear, showing up having authenticity. I think that's how I would say it, having authenticity and just being very transparent is how I would look at being ethical.
Mm, yeah. And I love that question because there's no wrong answer, really. Yeah. It is whatever it is for you. And it generally resonates with everyone, but oh my God, I get some great answers to that question.
It's a good question. I loved that question. That's a great question.
Now, what's your plans in the future? Where are you setting your sights at the moment? I know, you know, you want to get into bigger things. You know, you've gone in front of the camera and behind the camera. So is the production company the next big goal for you?
Here's another thing, which I try not to set goals because in my addiction, a lot of it is attached to fantasy, living in fantasy, negative fantasy or positive fantasy. Both of those aren't that that great for me. You know, future tripping is what we like to call it, like going into the future and fantasizing. I can get lost in that. And then the negative, where I can be like, oh, it's going to go bad, and like focusing on all the worry. So when you just ask that question, I'm really just trying to be. I have plans where the book is, it's three part, it's a trilogy, and I've already written the second book. So I'm now re-editing the second book while the first one is not even out yet. And my husband and I, people are interested in it for a TV show. So we wrote a pilot over the pandemic holiday. And, you know, I'm just putting one foot in front of the other and seeing what God has in store for me. Because I have to tell you, you know, a year ago, I didn't know I was going to write a book. Mm. A year ago, I didn't know I was going to have a podcast called Secret Life, and I was going to spill all my dirt while I spill other people's dirt. And we were going to be of service to people all over the world. So whenever I make plans, sometimes they're so limiting that I just have to like force myself to be and let the inspiration that comes allow it to come. Because I have to tell you, I never wanted to be on a podcast, or I don't even like the sound of my voice. I'm going to be very honest. And what happened was at 3 a.m., I woke up and I sat up really quick and I said, Secret Life Podcast. I allow other people to tell me their secrets and we have a conversation about it. And that's how it came. And I just followed that path. And if I had a plan, yeah, I wouldn't have followed that path.
Yeah. You know what? I am so glad you said that, because this year I'm exactly the same. You know, how when you come into a new year, everybody's like, oh, well, this is my resolution, these are my goals, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, come on. So I'm like, no goals, none of that. I'm just letting it flow. And as you said, just being, in the moment. I think the thing is that we get so tied up in the future or the past that we don't actually live in the now. And that is a really big thing since the pandemic that I'm all for, because
I think we should all throw out our resolution.
Yes.
Honestly, because I never wanted to be married, and I'm married. I never wanted a kid, and I have a kid. Mm. And those two things are such blessings, especially for me that never thought I was worthy enough to have it or that I could show up, you know, because I was so selfish and self-seeking. And if I made plans for my life, I wouldn't have had those beautiful things, you know, come out of all this growth. Mm. So I just think we should throw out that thing where you have resolutions or goals. You know, you have an idea of where you want to go, but God may take you somewhere completely different. That's 10 times better for you.
That's it. You know, you make plans and God laughs, huh?
Yeah, right. Totally, totally laughs. He's like, yeah, okay, lady.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, exactly the same. I wouldn't have thought I would be doing what I'm doing now, you know, 2 years ago. And by just letting go and letting it flow, my gosh, the things that are happening to me, I never thought would happen. So, yeah, I'm all for that.
I love it.
Now, speaking of your podcast, because I produce so many podcasts, I don't listen to that many, to be honest with you. But my God, when I listen to yours, I couldn't stop. And aww, that is very rare for me. I was sitting there on the edge of my seat going, oh, my God, this stuff is good. It is a great podcast. Can you just tell us a bit more about the kind of guests you've had and the kind of stories they've shared?
Okay, yeah. Just you saying that right now just literally validated all the hard work we've done, my husband and I, with the podcast. And that's the whole reason for someone to listen and be like, oh, my God. Mm. And also like, oh, I felt that way, or I've thought of that, or I've done that. So just thank you for saying that. Yeah, the good thing about my podcast is it's every walk of life. Mm. It's every ethnicity. It's age group. It's, you know, it's, we run the gamut, and half of our guests are well-known people, some of them, and the other half are anonymous. Sometimes I don't even know their real names and I just make up a name. But we've had, you know, a really difficult one for me was one of the first ones. It was Kristen's episode where she shot herself in the chest with a shotgun, whoa, committing suicide, and she lived. And when she was seeing me through that moment, she was in her car with the the gunshot through her chest, I was just like, this is it was such like a connection between her and I that of her for the rest of my life. Like, she's such a beautiful person, and coming out on the side, other side of it, and being an activist for suicide and all that. And then we have, you know, a beautiful friend of mine talking about emotional incest with his mom, and coming out stories with another one of my good friends, fertility issues, postpartum depression. You know, another very difficult episode for me was the episode about using abortion as birth control. So that one was really dark, and it went places. But then we have lighter ones where we talk about lying on our resume as an actor and all the stupid things, situations you put yourself in. Or another really fun one is a girl steals food at Whole Foods from Jeff Bezos because she hates him. So she'll like get a salad and then ring it up as a pizza, and she like can't stop herself. And I was like, what do you mean you can't stop here? She's like, I cannot stop stealing from Whole Foods 365. And that's a really funny one. And then I have really funny ones coming out about like being obsessed with reality TV, having it on 24/7. Yep. Or, I mean, we run the gamut. Every ism, every eating disorder for males and females, narcissists. We have every you can imagine. And right now I have – we've released 31 episodes, and we have like 92 left.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We have enough for 2.5 years. If I never got another interview, which I'm still interviewing people, we have enough for 92. And I have to tell you, it is hard every week to pick which one to air because they're so good.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of them, maybe I'd scrap, but majority, like almost 99% of them are amazing, and you do not feel alone. It's so beautiful. Thank you for asking me that question.
It is just one of the best shows. I really enjoy it, and I love the realness and the rawness of it. And you know, I'm getting a lot of that in the shows that I'm working on at the moment as well. And it's just like it changes you as a person, I think.
Yeah.
And the connections that you have with guests are just like they are some of my best friends now. Like,
I know, really, you just feel this connection where you're like, oh, like I really know that person. You cut through all the bullshit that, hi, nice to meet you. What do you do? Blah, blah, blah. But it's just like, this is what I'm going through. This is what I've been through. And I'm on the other side. And sometimes my guests aren't on the other side, and that's okay.
Mm. Yeah. And I think, you know, I just absolutely love podcasts. I mean, obviously we're here on one, but I just think they can do so much, you know, if done in the right way. And, you know, whether it be changing our perceptions, educating us, making change in the world, I think, you know, this podcast itself is doing huge things around the world by bringing people together and changing the way they do things. And so I'm so glad that you could join us and share your story as well. It's been amazing. Now, before you go, I've got a couple more for you.
Yes.
If people want to find out about you, or where can they go?
Well, the main thing I'm on is on Instagram. It's hard for me to be on like Facebook, Twitter, and all that. So Instagram, it's at the Breanne Davis. And I also have Secret Life Podcast that you can find me at. And I interact with, you know, all our listeners and guests. And we do a lot of Instagram lives. Mm. If the person wants to say who they are, I try to do an Instagram live that week so we can get like a follow-up episode.
Yep.
So that they can find me. You can reach out to Secret Life Novel that now if you want to get on the waiting list for the book. Like I said, it comes out February 12th, Amazon, all over the world. And yeah, and reach out. If you're struggling right now, especially with sex and love addiction, reach out to me. I have numbers where you can get on meetings all over the world. I have people. I just want to be of service and be for people who are struggling. Because you are not alone.
Mm.
We all have baggage. We all have secrets. And you tell me yours and I'll tell you mine. And we can be in it together.
And I love that you do that. And you make yourself so accessible, whereas, you know, a lot of people in Hollywood would not. And, yeah, I congratulate you for that.
Thank you.
Now, last big question for you, Breanne.
Mm-hmm.
What's the change you'd like to see in the world, and how can we bring it to life?
All right. Well, that's a big question. I think the one big thing I would like to see in the world, especially having a son, he's only 2.5, but I feel like, especially for boys, porn, accessibility to porn, accessibility to the internet and social media, I would really like to see that change for our future. It's destroying generations after generations of people, you know, young girls and guys and whoever, you know, they don't know how to connect on a one-on-one level anymore. And I just feel like with this over-sexualization, it being in the media so much, that it's really hurting us as humans. And so if I could see a change in the world to see, like, can we connect not on social media and the internet, which is great. It's a great platform and I use it. But I would love for humans to find a better way to connect now. And I'm just, so everyone knows, I have, you know, I've DM a friend instead of picking up the phone and calling her. Like, I'm watching her stories and then DMing her instead of picking up and say, hey, how are you? And I don't want to do that anymore. Because it's this false sense of intimacy. It's not real when you're typing somebody on the internet. It's like,
that's
pick
it.
Up the phone.
And it can be so misread as well, can't it? Like, and there's this culture now that don't call me. Message me, you know, like, why?
Yeah.
Why? And when you try to ring someone, they don't pick up. It's like, all right. So, but, you know, I agree with you as well. And recently I had a guest who is a psychologist and sex and intimacy coach. And she was talking about, you know, porn and the difference. And I think the thing is that nowadays people don't understand it's there for entertainment. It's not there as education. And I think a lot of people in our latest generation are seeing that as, oh, this is how we must do it, you know?
This is how a woman looks. This is how it looks when you perform. Like, porn is so produced and so, like, it's a fantasy. And I think kids these days are thinking that's what sex looks like between people or whatever. And it's like, it's really bad. When I watched a thing on CNN and young boys watch porn as early as 6 years old. And that just broke my heart, because I remember at a very young age, and I've shared this story in the book, I saw Romeo and Juliet at a very young age. Is the movie from the 1967, that the Romeo and Juliet then. And it scarred me for life. What I believed a love meant, it had to be so passionate and dramatic that one or more people had to drink poison or stab themselves for it to mean true love. And I grew up a very long time having this false idea, which I didn't even know I had until intense therapy, years and years of therapy and step work and being in the program. And I didn't realize, like, I saw that way too young. I should not have been watching Shakespeare movies. It sounds culturally cool, but really it damaged my young mind.
Yeah.
You know, I saw Michael White's butt. So I thought, cute butt. Somebody's got to die at the end for it to be true love. And that's happening to our kids today. And I have a son now, and I have a responsibility to teach him what true intimacy looks like. It's not a fantasy. You have to take out the trash and pay bills and be a partner, also love the person. Like, we don't show that in society. And that, to me, I feel like is my movement also, is what real intimacy looks like. And the way I do that is show up for my partner, my husband, show up for my son, and show up for my listeners and my guests and my sponsees, and speak all over the world for my program and write a book. That's how I can show up and try to change the world.
Yeah. Oh, and this is a conversation, like I keep saying, that we've got to have. And and it's got to get to the roots of education, I think, for this to change. I think we've kind of stepped back and let go of what that is today. And also, you know, now in a pandemic, it's even worse. People are not connecting like they should.
I mean, I even feel myself sometimes. I mean, it's exhausting being at home with your family all the time, especially in LA. Everything is shut down. Yeah. Like, our numbers are out of control. And sometimes I find myself with my son and he's doing something else and I pick up my phone and I look and I'm like answering people on Instagram. And then I catch myself and I'm like, what are you doing? Mm. Like, I don't need my son to be watching me hold the phone.
Mm.
He's only 2.5, but still, like, the example, and I don't want my son to be so disconnected and looking at his phone. Like, it terrifies me.
And this is it, you know, we get conditioned and kids basically mirror what they see. So, Wow, we've just got to be so conscious, don't we?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying, you know, I'm human. I make flaws. I'm an addict in recovery. So my husband and I really tried to not pick our phones up when we're playing with our son or he can see us. Mm. But, you know, we slip too. And I've made amends to my son already. I've been like, I'm sorry, mommy should not be on her phone. Like, I've taken responsibility for my actions and I put it down. And that's the best I can do. If I can help my son not grow up and be so disconnected like I was, then I feel like I'm doing a good job.
Mm. Well, he's a little cutie and thank goodness he's got you. look, I can't thank you enough, Brianne, for being a part of the Ethical Evolution. Thank you so much.
It was so much fun and it was so lovely talking to you. I could talk to you forever. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Ethical Evolution podcast. If you're an ethical business owner, change maker, or holistic healer who's determined to make a change in the world and you need support to spread your message, visit ethicalchangeagency.com to collaborate.